You're tuned into the Awakening Zone Radio Network, your news and information source for empowered spiritual awakening.
Welcome to the D-Spot, the place where nighttime dreams, daytime desires, and your highest destiny all come together. The D-Spot is brought to you live from the heart of Enchanted Topanga Canyon, California, on the Awakening Zone, the international radio network for empowered awakening. And I'm your host, Dr. Dream, Kelly Sullivan Walden. And for those of you who don't know me, I am the quote-unquote dream doctor. I've written several dream interpretation books and books on dreaming. And my website is kellysullivanwalden.com. Or if you want the easy URL, it's ihadthestrangestdream.com. My books are I Had the Strangest Dream, It's All in Your Dreams, Dreaming Heaven, Dream Oracle Cards, and that kind of thing. And today is the day once a month where I join with my amazing friend, Joan Gelfand, who is a phenomenon, a poet, an artist, a dreamer, a leader, a gorgeous specimen of spirituality rolled up in a human body. And I love her, and I'm so excited to have her co-hosting the show with me today. So Joni, are you there?
I'm here.
Hallelujah. Welcome to the new year. Welcome to the D-Spot. I know you were traveling all over the world since we last spoke, and maybe you can tell us a little bit about some of the adventures that you've had, and then tell us about the amazing guests that we'll be talking to today. So take it away.
Okay. Well, Happy New Year to you, too, and I'm happy that
Thank you. We have
Marty Storm, a wonderful artist, online with us today. So we'll get to Marty in a couple of minutes. Kelly, Thailand was amazing. I did have a very spiritual dream while I was there.
Okay.
Do you want
to share it?
I would love to.
Let's hear.
So I'll keep it short. You can give me the 30-second.
Or keep it long if it's a juicy one. Why cut it off?
Okay, so, you know, a lot of people go to Thailand and they have their cameras in between themselves and the experience, but we went and we meditated in the temples and we kind of got in there with the locals and after 2 weeks of being blessed by monks and making offerings at all of the altars and offering incense and flowers, on New Year's Eve, we meditated with about 1,000 people and these monks, and there were these bongs going off and fireworks. And it was just crazy, really fabulous, these lanterns going up in the sky. So that was New Year's Eve, and that was the night that I had this dream. So the dream was that my husband, Adam, who you know, wanted to meet this Asian man. Hello, Buddha. So I said, okay, I'll introduce you. And he was really building him up like, you know, this was his guru. And he really, really, you know, had a very, a lot of energy around meeting this person. And so finally, the man appears on my dream screen, and he's this attractive young Asian man. And for some reason, I understand that he had lost a son. And so in my mind, I'm thinking, oh, this is going to be such an intense meeting. He's going to be such a heavy guy, you know, a parent who lost his kid. Mm. And he comes to meet us, and he's just super cool, and he just looks at me and he says, I don't know why everybody makes such a big deal about death. Life, all the same. And then he sits in meditation with this big smile on his face.
Unbelievable.
It was intense. It was intense. And that was like all this new year. Like I said, it was after 2 weeks of sitting in these temples. And I'm sure that there's this one place that we went, Chiang Mai, which is in northern Thailand. And there's a lot of history around these Buddhas that magically replicated, and Buddha's figures that came out of the earth completely shaped, you know. I mean, there's just all this energy, and I'm sure there's vortexes there and all kinds of spiritual energy in that city. And I just thought that dream was such a gift.
Oh my God, that is the gift that must be given back 1,000 times. That's a life-changing dream.
Yeah,
I feel altered listening to that. And I mean, how did you feel when you woke up? Can you dial into what your energy was like when you woke up with that dream?
Well, you know, the whole trip, I felt incredibly calm and serene. And when I woke up, I felt like, oh, what a gift. That's all. I mean, I just felt like happy. I mean,
right.
If I had to, you know, say an emotion, you know, and what was interesting to me is I've been meditating a lot, you know, very seriously into my spiritual practice. And, you know, I was very anxious about the trip, though. I was like, mm-hmm. Oh, my God, it's such a long trip. It's 17 hours from California.
Right.
And we had 7 flights, and I was like, you know, I'd never been to that country before, and Adam has never been to Asia, and I was like, what's going to happen? From the beginning, the whole trip just went seamlessly.
Wow.
And was so calm. And I just kept saying to myself, it must be because we're in this Buddhist country. Well, the people are unbelievably mellow and sweet and welcoming. I mean, I got a little converted, like, I think I'm coming back.
And I am going with you.
This might be one of my power spots.
Yeah, and you will not be going alone. I will definitely be tagging along with
you.
That is so amazing. You know, it's so funny how often on this show, the topic of dreams seems to just so seamlessly tie into the topic of coming to terms with death. I mean, it's just amazing how similar they are to one another. In fact, I heard that there is a Tibetan dream practice called Tendril, whereby it's a shamanic practice where you deliberately intend to, in your semi-waking state, like hypnagogic state, where you're right in between worlds, where you deliberately attempt to stay awake while you're on the bridge between awake and sleeping, as well as the same bridge as the bridge between this world and the other world, and like, in other words, death and life, but there is no death, and keeping that alive, keeping that intact as a path to awakening and a path to enlightenment. And I had a similar dream not that long ago, Joan, but I was the kid, and in my dream, my dad was leaving, and it turns out he was dying, but I gave him a big hug and a big kiss, and it was like, okay, cool, see you soon. And it was like, no, you won't be seeing me soon. It'll be a while. It's like, okay, well, there was no skipping a beat. It was no different than me saying, okay, good night, see you in the morning, or okay, see you on the other side. No difference at all. And really, I think, if we could really bring that into this Maya, this world, what do we have to be afraid of? I mean, there's nothing, really. We can be pretty fearless and then pretty, courageous. I don't even think courageous is the right word, because courageous is about acting boldly in the face of fear. But what happens when you don't have the fear? You just kind of do what's magical and what you feel like doing without any big heavy weights around your ankles. I don't know. I think it's a great way to open this show. And I pulled a dream card, and I've been doing that before each show, as you know. And the card that I pulled today is school. So I'm going to read a little bit about that, and then I'll pass the baton to you to tell us all about Marty Storm. Great name, by the way, Marty Storm. I already know that something's cooking. I can feel the storm brewing. It's so exciting. So I pulled the school card, and I already feel like I'm learning a lot on this show just with that dream, Joan. So here's what the dream oracle card says about the symbol of school. The keynote is examine your beliefs about being tested. The message is you have a highly individualized curriculum for life in order to grow to your fullest potential. You've orchestrated the aspects of your life that are testing you right now. You know long ago that you would emerge through these trials brighter, better, and wiser for the experience. Remember, you have access to the Hall of Records and the teacher's manual that has all the answers to all the problems currently grading on you. You've paid the intuition, and you have the combination to the locker that contains the resources you need. With this realization, hold your head high as you walk confidently through the halls of this university called life. So the meaning, being tested. In the language of dreams, school signifies a learning phase in your life, which hopefully is all the time. This dream may reflect a job or relationship that is testing you. You may also feel under scrutiny, examining the truth of who you really are. The first cut is the deepest, and school dreams may hearken us back to the first time we felt pressured to make the grade. These dreams may be helping you to remove your heavy backpack of insecurities so that you may graduate to a more empowered future. Most people who have recurring school dreams are highly driven, by the way, success-oriented individuals who are constantly testing themselves. In other words, I've never met an underachiever who has this recurring dream. Mantra. I am making the grade with flying colors as I continually earn higher degrees of wisdom in the school of life.
Kelly, that's beautiful.
Thank
you.
So you wrote
all the dream cards.
I did, and they accompany a beautiful image by master painter Rasuli. Actually, he calls himself a fusion artist. He would bite me if I called him a painter. He's a fusion artist, but his images, his graphics are all there. But yes, thank you, Joni.
Beautiful.
Glad you like.
Should we bring on Marty?
Yes.
And then
yes, let's
if people
bring
want
her into this classroom.
Her website, because, you know, when we interview poets, they can read their poetry, but if your listeners are interested in looking at her website, they can look at the pictures think about if they want to ask any questions. It's www.martystorm.com, M-A-R-D-I-S-T-O-R-M. com.
R-Z, awesome. It's a beautiful, beautiful website. Okay, great, Joni. So bring her on without further ado.
So, you know, as I tell you, you know, one thing leads to another, and Marty is actually the partner of Trevor Wernit, who we interviewed a couple months ago, and they live up in Occidental in Northern California. Marty's an artist and healer who utilizes her dream material in her work. She experiences a rich inner world of dreams and imagination that seek to emerge into personal and collective life in the material world. And as you can see from her website, she's an artist, a photographer, a painter, a sculptor, a teacher, and, you know, really beautiful, beautiful work and a beautiful person. So, Marty, come on the line.
Oh, I'm here.
Good.
Yay. Hi, Marty.
Can you hear me? Hi.
Yes. Oh, my goodness. Your work is extraordinary. I am in love with you.
Oh,
wow.
Thank you.
So, take it away, Joni. What do you want to ask her first? I've got
okay.
a thousand questions
no, I
waiting.
Think for your listeners, I think, you know, we'll start at the top, which is, you know, how do your dreams influence your work? How do you decide which dreams get incorporated So I guess I'd ask you two questions at once: how your dreams influence your work, and what's your creative process in working with the material? So those two questions.
Oh, that sounds like three questions.
Well, you just
jump
just
in wherever you want to go.
Yeah. So yeah, dreams. The way I decide what dreams want to come through with the work is what keeps niggling at me, like it keeps wanting my attention.
Oh, so
I have some
word.
Dreams that they move, you know, and I write them in my dream journal. Maybe I do dream work with them. But then there's some where it feels like they just keep coming back up into my consciousness, and I just keep thinking about it. And sometimes there might be a particular image or feeling in the dream that just keeps surfacing. And then I know I need to do more work with it. And there's a variety of different ways that that I do work with it creatively. And I know we'll go into detail about that, but that's the main thing. Is like, is it coming up repetitively? And sometimes especially with my large sculptures. If you're looking at my website, I have some really large sculptures. You know, those came through as like a really clear dream saying, "Make this sculpture," which is really
wow.
Which is makes them stand out a little bit different than the other pieces that I've created as being really clearly wanting to come into being. And they feel like beings to me. I feel like once I'm done creating them, I step back and I'm like, oh my God, this thing's alive, and it now has a life of its own. And especially these large pieces, they leave home and they never come back. So they end up having these entire lives all over the place. Like one of them's been at Google headquarters for years, and the other was in the San Francisco.
Oh my God!
Lobby in San Francisco for many years. It's just all these people having interactions
piece?
Have nothing to do with me. That hippocampus piece, the blue seahorse. It's
so
on my. It was on the homepage. I think it's the first image that comes up.
Yeah,
but if you also go to public sculptures. You can go down to, let's see, I'll take you to Burning Man Festival if you click on that, and then click on 2002 Hippocampus. You'll see the original installation of it. But there's a bunch of other images on my website with the different places that it's been installed at in San Francisco and Google, and that's listed up there under public sculptures. I think it's Google headquarters. So, like that one, it's out in the world having its own life. The giant unicorn piece, Twilight Anima Rising, has its own life at a restaurant and winery right now. I've actually tried to remove, you know, take it away from them a few times, and they keep, you know, saying no.
I don't blame them.
They keep throwing money at me. No, leave it. I'm like, okay. Sounds like it's going to be yours. So
there's a lot of energy in this hippocampus piece.
What was the dream? Was that one of the ones that was inspired by a dream? I'd love to hear if you remember any of the content.
Yes, almost all of my art is inspired by dreams. I've had hippocampus pop up in dreams. I've even been that hippocampus in dreams.
Oh.
So I've actually had a dream where I turned into that hippocampus.
Just listening and they're not able to see, let's describe the hippocampus so that people can use their imagination to see it in their mind's eye.
It is about 7 feet tall, and it's a hippocampus is a seahorse, like Poseidon's horse that pulled the carriages for Poseidon. And so it's got fins down the back of its neck and legs and that have webbing instead of hooves. And it goes into the ground. It disappears into the earth and then pops back up with the serpentine tail and loops up, and then it pops back into the earth as if the earth is water and pops back up with the tail sticking out. So it's like in three pieces as if it's swimming through the land.
Yeah.
And it's blue.
What was it like to be the
hippocampus?
What did that feel like?
I'm sorry, you cut out a little bit. What does it feel like?
Oh, sorry. Yeah, like tell me what it was like to be a hippocampus.
It was exciting. A lot of energy, a lot of water
powerful?
Energy. When I have hippocampus pop up in dreams, it really feels like this intuitive, you know, watery, emotional quality, because to me the hippocampus is like of the ocean, and the ocean here at least is to the west, so it feels like a kind of a western guardian, that energy holding the unconscious. ocean.
I'm going to incubate that dream. I want to be a hippocampus tonight. I'm jealous. I've been a dolphin, but not a hippocampus. I've been a lot of things in my dream, but never a hippocampus.
I think the dolphins must be the friends of the hippocampus.
Yes, oh, sure.
For sure. Maybe kind of like the messengers of the hippocampus. The hippocampus seems kind of, I mean, it's so great that it's like this horse, this watery horse. Amazing.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Was there like a narrative that went along with this dream? Like, were you trying to get somewhere? Was someone after you? Or you just remember the hippocampus?
You know, I'm trying to remember back because that was a few years ago that I created this one. I remember it surfacing up in my mind. I remember the dream that kind of came right after it, I think. Mm. I'm trying to remember if it also came during the process of making it. But I do remember in the dream deciding to jump into a puddle, a dark puddle of water, and hide from a friend. And as the friend came up the drive towards this house, I decided to jump out of the water disguised as a hippocampus, you know, transforming my body into a hippocampus, and just be like, surprise!
Wow.
I jump out of the water, surprise! And as I'm doing this with this really playful energy, I suddenly feel that in the dark puddle that I've jumped into, there's actually some kind of a dark presence underneath reaching up towards me.
Ooh.
So that
what
caught
do you
my
think
attention.
That's about? That is curious to me. Like, is it trying to bring you down? Is it like an adversarial energy or just an unintegrated element?
At that time, with that dream being probably 10 years ago at this point, I would say that it was probably the parts of my unconscious I wasn't aware of yet grabbing for my attention.
It's a different context.
You know, stepping.
That something's... Go ahead.
Uh-huh. Oh, I was going to say, just as far as this also kind of representing that energy of like really bursting forth and transforming myself with ease. So it's like this needing to work on this other piece that wanted to kind of pull me back down under the water.
Right. Oh, interesting. Pulling you back in because you're not done or you're still connected or...
Or that's just part of the process of transforming is learning how to work with, knowing all of myself and knowing all those energies.
Right. Those
and integrating them.
Mm-hmm. I have a lot of dreams these days about dark, murky waters and finding, like, jumping in and there being some kind of, I mean, it being kind of difficult, but it being magical at the same time. So that's curious to me that you bring that up. I think the context around darkness is also interesting. It kind of connects with what Joan and I were talking about at the beginning about the darkness, meaning anything mysterious or death. And if we can look at it like, oh, okay, well, there's something that it's supposed to teach me that I haven't learned yet. So it's not necessarily adversarial, although it might be scary or uncomfortable.
Right. It feels adversarial. And I've had a lot of dreams like that. And and I notice it shifts. As I start to really unearth more of my unconscious, whatever it's about, then it starts to shift. It starts to have less power over me. And then also the dreams actually change, so I don't have that kind of undertow feeling to them. So I've had a lot of that kind of dark undertow just during certain phases of my life. And then as I dive into, like, what's this about, I'm very active in the dream community where I live and really work with my dreams and in that sense, too, as well as through my art. So I really try to dive in when I have those dreams, find out what it's about so I can move through it.
No pun intended.
Yeah.
Diving in. Very cool. Joan, I cut you off. What were you?
No. I'm fascinated with the imagery. I was going to ask Marty about her assemblages because on her website, there's another whole series that she's done with these windows broken up.
Oh, yes.
Six panes. And I really found them, you know, very evocative. Like each pane has a different image. And so I was interested because you also did, I was interested in you talking specifically about what you said, painted by the artist as a child. I wanted to hear a little bit about that. And then also, you've given a workshop with Trevor where dreaming ourselves awake, And you said you used the intuitive process of painting and point zero. I just thought maybe you could talk about that a little bit.
Sure.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, wow. That's
yeah,
another loaded question.
I didn't answer all the first ones. those windows, yeah, came out of an old hotel where I grew up. My grandma's house was an old hotel from the 1800s. And those windows I painted when I was a child. I actually did all the painting, the trim. So some of them are kind of sloppy, probably because I was getting tired at that point.
But
I left it all intact with the drips and splashes on it because that's what happened when I was 10 or 11 years old. And so it was really fun to take these windows and create these what feel like dream pieces to me because they have these images that my unconscious is drawn towards. Some of them are, you know, images out of dreams. But I put them together in a way that feels like a dream collage. It feels, because there's different kinds of dreams. There's waking dreams, intuitive dreams, like feeling into spaces that feel dreamlike instead of being conscious and clear. And that's what they feel kind of like to me. Going into them could adventure into a dream.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they feel like, you call them window to the soul.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they do feel like a window into something. Yeah, they're great.
Yeah.
They're very, very evocative.
They're so beautiful. Let's go back a little bit let's go back to your early days. I think that's really interesting that you grew up in an old hotel from the 1800s. So what were your early days of getting into dreams and art? Is this one of the first things that you did, these windows?
No. These windows I did recently, just in the past couple of years.
I think when she says she painted them, she means that
the
just
trim.
Trim, not the,
right.
not the artwork.
Yeah.
I was going to say, you are the craziest prodigy I've ever heard
life. No. I was just, they were intact in the hotel. I was painting, I was helping my grandma paint the hotel. So she had me paint the windows. So I didn't grow up in the hotel. I grew up my summers were spent at the hotel. And my dream life has really, really been active since I was born. You know, my dreams go back to when I was 2 years old or a year and a half. And I've had a very, very rich dream life, and I've always gotten a lot of information and inspiration from my dreams, as well as spiritual guidance from my dreams. Mm. Yeah.
Interesting. So many people I talk to say when I was a kid, I really paid attention to dreams and I got a lot of guidance and imagery. But then as an adult, that kind of dropped off because I had more serious things to do with my life. And now those my dreams are kind of the days of old, and that's the way of it. But there's some people that's not the case. They keep their connection to dreams and they keep their childlike imagination intact. And so how come you were able to keep going with this, whereas most people would have stopped?
Well, that's a really good question. I've just had very strong dreams that are hard to ignore. And I don't know exactly, I don't have a good answer for you why they stayed, but maybe it's just from paying attention to them, listening, and because I've always done art and I've always borrowed images out of my dreams and exploring, as I mentioned, as a spiritual path before I discovered other forms of healing, transformation, and opening to spirit, this was the way I was doing it. You know, I found great comfort in looking to my dreams. There was, a lot of situations when I was younger that, in my family, it wasn't a particularly easy time. And so for me to have the dreams, it was like I had a place to go to that was mine. So I did a lot of daydreaming too. Maybe that's what helped.
Right.
Well, I think daydreaming is critical to the art creative process for sure.
Yes. And I did want to go back to answering your question that you had around the creative process and the workshop I did with Travis Burnett. And we do have another one coming up in March. And this process I call it intuitive painting. And it's a way of working dreams, and that's what I use it for. It's not the only thing you can do with intuitive painting, but for me, it's about accessing the unconscious. So sometimes, and because I'm such an avid dreamer, what comes up for me to begin with is dream images. Like, again, a strong image that's niggling at me. will often be one of the first things that pop out onto the paper. And then it's like, and then just flowing with what else wants to happen. So it's not about like painting the dream that I had. Instead, it's seeing in each moment what color, what shape, what thing wants to happen on each piece of paper as it's revealed by my intuition. And sometimes what happens is sort of a continuation of the dream that I had, but things are moved around, different stuff is happening. You know, there's like more information that comes out of the unconscious this way. And so it's a way of working the dream. It's like I get more insight to what my unconscious is wanting to get through to me. And plus it's transformational. It just feels really good to be moving that energy out and really looking within, because that's part of the technique is really getting in touch with your intuition and your flow. And when you get into that flow place and you're not judging anything that's coming out, it's like it becomes like a direct line from our unconscious onto the page.
Wow. Okay, so just to make sure I'm tracking what you said. So you start in some ways with a dream, and there's a thought. So if it's the hippocampus, did I say it right? Okay. So you have that image in your mind and that feeling in your body, and then you go to a canvas or a piece of paper, and you start there, and then you kind of with the intent of like honoring that dream, you're allowing yourself to flow. So you're not totally rigid, like, okay, the dream looked exactly this way, so it has to be like this. So do you allow yourself to go off so it's kind of figurative, it's not exactly literal
in
the dream? And then just let the rest of the intuitive process flow.
Yes, because if you just paint what you saw or experienced in the dream, then it's sort of like it's already been done. So it's not really creating new material, but if there's a piece that you feel like that energy is calling, and you start there, and then just see what happens. And it may be new stuff that wasn't in the dream, and sometimes it's a whole bunch of stuff from, you know, same characters from the dream. Could be anything. But it's pretty amazing work, because then I'll step back, and there will be, not while I'm doing it, but later, take a look at what's happening, and it's just like, working a dream, you can figure out what's happening. You have a lot of insights. Yeah, it's fun work. It's fun work, and it's inspirational work too, because there's a lot of new things that come through that I would have never done if I was just painting like a painting or a sculpture. You know, it gives more creative freedom to discover things I didn't ever think of putting together, or images I didn't think of going into. So it really opens up the creative channels.
Like a larger palette from which to paint in some ways. More colors, more things to draw from.
Yeah. Different styles, techniques, everything comes through. Whatever happens, you just let it come through. One tends to move away from what's the way one might be trained to do it. Like for me, I went through school for painting, and it kind of killed it for me. I was really, I loved painting so much until I went to school for it.
Wow.
And then I didn't know, and it's not that I didn't like painting anymore, it's just I didn't know how to paint or what to paint. Whereas when I entered into school, I painted dreams. That's what I did. And then,
oh my God.
And then I got out, and I didn't know what I was supposed to do anymore. And now, when I came across this technique a few years ago, Michelle Casseau is one of the founders of the technique, I just blew my mind. I was like, oh, my God, this is exactly what I need to restart my ability to paint. For me, after going through school, I switched to sculpture because I had no background. So nobody had killed it for me.
Thank God.
And anything could go, and I just was like, okay, here it comes, and stuff just started flowing through me.
Right. Wow. It is about, I'm not against education. I think that's great, but the goal is to develop yourself, and sometimes we have to unlearn all of that learning.
Yes.
As long as you get back to yourself. Sometimes there's great teachers that help us to develop things and help us to really dive deeper into our soul, and sometimes they can stomp it out of us. I've had both.
Yes.
I've had both kinds of teachers. So for those who are just joining us, Joan Gelfand and I are talking to the incredible Marty Storm, an artist healer who utilizes her dream material in her work. And Joan, God, you pick great artists and great people. You never cease to amaze me. So bravo to you for finding Marty. And Marty's website is martystorm.com. And some of these pieces appear in, you've got something in the lobby at Google and in front of restaurants, and these windows are amazing. You are truly incredible. And Joan and I, when we do these shows, the emphasis is about how to bring dreams to light and how to inspire people to not just go, oh, dreams are cool, let me write them down and leave it at that, but to inquire into, well, what else might I do to honor this dream? And in honoring the dream, we honor ourselves, we honor our souls, and in many ways elevate our lives to the level of art. Anything
yeah.
else, Joan? Why do you do this? Why were you inspired to pull Marty into this and to do this? I just want to hear a drop from you, because sometimes we just interview and we don't really talk about why we're doing this. So what's your why?
You know, I think that when you, for myself, because I use dreams in my writing, I feel exactly what you said, Kelly. You know, people say, oh, I had this dream, but they don't, many times they tell this to me and they don't even take the time to write it down. I'm like, get Kelly's book, start writing your dreams down and looking at them, because so many times our dreams aren't what we think they are, right? Like you said, you know, school. Somebody might think, oh, school, that doesn't mean anything. But
right.
Look at everything you had to say about school today. And so for me, I think it was, you know, using a dream in my writing is, like you said before, is a way to share it. You like you said, you know, we need to share this dream 1,000 times, right? Well, it's the same thing. Every artist that we interview, there's a compulsion or a compunction to feel like, you know, I had this dream, but this actually could be a healing dream for other people, or this actually could resonate with other people. Do you know what I mean? In other words, maybe some of our more personal dreams we're not going to use in our artwork, but the ones that feel more universal, and that would be an interesting question for Marty, too. I mean, I guess from hearing you talk, it sounds like everything is very personal.
Yeah.
I guess for me, I kind of edit out some of the more intimate ones, and I do incorporate the ones that feel more universal and that they're speaking, you know, on a larger scale, but how do you feel
like
about
the
that?
Dream, like the dream you just shared at the beginning of the show about the boy and the father. So, Marty, I could feel you bubbling over there.
Oh, yeah, I think that's a really good point, the way you put that, for sure. Because, yeah, there's some big dreams that feel very universal, and then there's some that are really personal. And I think I do dive right into those personal ones. And put myself out there with all of my personal information. But I do that with my healing work, too. You know, it's just so personal. And I reveal so much, you know, vulnerability with the work that I do. That
I can hear a little feedback. Let me just say, if anybody's got their computer open, just mute it. So I'm hearing a little bit of the show kind of happening in the background, I think.
Oh. Maybe I'll close mine for now. Yeah.
Or just mute it. I do that sometimes, too. Sorry, Marty. I wanted to have a clear recording of what you were saying, because I could feel it was brilliant.
Oh, no. What was I saying?
Your personal work.
Yeah, just that it's that I go there with the vulnerability, you know, from helping others from my own personal experience, and that is very intimate and personal. So that I think that comes through with some of my art as well, although I also get those big dreams that feel more universal, and those are huge. They're very vital to share.
I think it's all, like, I mean, I think personal, like, if I had a dream that I needed to run my laundry through the cycle one more time because blah, blah, blah. And it's like, okay, maybe I don't have to share that with everybody. I mean, who cares?
But
if it's about some kind of deep ache or something that is personal to me, but I can look at it and think, wow, probably every person on the planet can relate to that in some way, shape, or form. So what's most deeply personal is probably most universal, just like Paulo Coelho's perspective in The Alchemist that Whatever connects with one person's soul connects to the soul of the world. I just want to read this little quote that I found. Oh, and I'll and hold that thought for 1 second. This is kind of bubbling up. Bob Haas, who has just become one of my he's on my board of advisors for Dream Life Coach Training. I'm so grateful. He's a dream scientist and the past president of the International Association for the Study of Dreams, which Marty, I'm sure you're connected with all the art and dream. Are you connected with them?
IASD? I'm a member.
Okay,
yeah.
I would think they would like have you as their poster child because what you do.
I was in their art show and they did love my art. Yeah.
I could only imagine. My God. I mean, yours is exactly. But one thing that he says, because he says if you rarely recall dreams or don't regularly work on them, they still do their job. Dreams are amazing in the fact that they do a job whether we remember them or not, because even people that are avid dream passionate people like Joan, Marty, and myself, and probably everyone who's listening to this show right now, even us, we are only remembering one tiny bit of our dreams. We don't have to remember all of them to benefit from them. However, by recalling our dreams, any dreams, and working on them, meaning putting them to art or even talking about them or sharing about them or taking some form of action that they inspire, it's speeds up the process of our evolution by getting the waking mind and our ego involved in this deep unconscious process. So I just added a few things to what Bob Haas said, but basically the gist is that our dreams, we don't need to participate. We don't have to participate in our breathing in order to benefit from it. But when we know that we're breathing and we can take a deeper breath or modulate our breathing, we can do things with it that, and we can benefit from it in other ways. And when we do that with our dreaming, it's like we can take ourselves on a magic ride that we could never do otherwise with it just in the background. So I just had to jump on that. And Marty, I heard you going,
that was great. That was fabulous quote. Yeah, I like that. It's happening, whether we're aware of it or not. And when we raise our awareness, we can do, even more things with it and accelerate transformation, accelerate things in our life that we want to change, I think, if we listen to our dreams. It's interesting you also used breath as an analogy because I'm a breath worker. So I know all about when we change our breath, we can access some pretty big spaces for transformation.
Like what? Oh, yeah. God, that's so perfect, because I don't say that all the time. I rarely say that. So I was tapping into you. So how is that? So what's the parallel between this autonomic function? I mean, we don't have to tell our dreams to dream. They just do it. We don't have to tell our breath to breathe. It just does it.
Right.
By being conscious, what are the benefits of doing that with breath? Let's bring that in.
Well, there's certain ways to breathe consciously and deeply that will allow us to flow into a slightly altered state of consciousness that's kind of a super consciousness, like a bigger space than our usual mind. So it's more like feeling your whole body in a different way than you do right now. And accessing all kinds of information from the unconscious is another way in. It's just another way into the unconscious where things that we have buried there surface into our conscious mind. And it's a way of accessing our deeper soul self, because then we start realizing, what's going around in our heads in the background, and then getting in touch with really what our deeper self is. And bringing that forward. I just taught a 3-day workshop in this last weekend. It was quite a wonderful weekend. And so it's a big passion of mine. And creativity ties into it. It's part of actually what I teach people is I tie in creativity, because I feel it's actually one of the big energies that want to come through that a lot of people are held back from for a variety of reasons. A lot of people get really turned off to creativity when they're quite young. They start thinking, I can't do anything creative, or I'm not an artist, or whatever it might be. And they hold themselves back when, in fact... Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead, John.
Oh, no. I just find this thing. There's a lot of intimidation, even around something as fun and playful as using your dreams.
Right.
In artwork. Yeah.
Right, and a lot of people feel they can't, I can't paint that, so I'm not going to. So that's part of what I do with the intuitive painting workshops that I teach, is helping people who think they can't paint learn that they can express themselves creatively. And it's like anybody who can pick up a paintbrush can do this, if we release the judgment we have that thinking we can't. And surrender to, because we get trained when we're so young thinking we have to make a pretty picture to please people. So this is part of the unlearning.
Oh my God.
Stop trying to make pretty pictures and just be creative.
Oh,
and
my God.
What I find within my own life, allowing myself to just go into that purely creative state without judgment, instead of trying to make art to sell or make art, you know, be a certain way, be socially acceptable, just go into it and explore what wants to come through. I think that's, again, that's transformational. You start diving into your own unconscious. By doing that.
On this show, my hope is that people listen to it and are inspired. And I know that, I mean, I do this for myself as well, because I am so inspired. We're going to take a quick little commercial break and come right back. And Joan Gelfand and I are speaking with Mardi Storm. Her website is Mardi Storm, MardiStorm.com. And we will be right back and talk about more inspiration and how you can bring your dreams to life.
Hi, this is Jeffrey Hoppe for the Crimson Circle. Thanks for listening to today's program on The Awakening Zone, the international network for empowered human awakening. The Awakening Zone is produced and sponsored by the Crimson Circle on the web at www.crimsoncircle.com. The website is a safe space to experience your spiritual journey without membership or dues and no dogma or rules. It's a gathering place for anyone who is awakening, no matter what their background or beliefs. The Crimson Circle Library contains over 10 years of some of the most insightful and provocative spiritual information available today, with channeled messages from the popular Tobias, Kutumi Lal Singh, and Adama St. Germain. Everything in the library is free. Just log in and download it in text, audio, or video formats. On the website, you can also find out about upcoming workshops and events, including tours to sacred and powerful sites around the world. Also, check out the store for a wide selection of home study courses and special topic channels. And finally, see if there's a Crimson Circle certified teacher in your area. They offer classes on subjects ranging from death transitions, spiritual birthing, ascension, clearing energy imbalances, and creating your own reality. With over 500 certifications worldwide, there's likely to be a Crimson Circle teacher near you. When you go to the Crimson Circle website, you'll see right away that you are not alone. There are humans all over the planet who, like you, are discovering the God within. Crimson Circle at www.crimsoncircle.com. Proud sponsors of the Awakening Zone Radio Network. And now, back to today's program.
Welcome back to the D-Spot, and I am your host, Dr. Dream, Kelly Sullivan Walden, and I am joined by my amazing co-host, Joan Gelfand, dream poet, writer, traveler, dreamer extraordinaire. And Joan's website, by the way, is JoanGelfand.com. And Joan, while we're in announcement mode, is there any announcements you'd like to make? Anything that's great and exciting in your world besides the fabulous dreams and fabulous traveling you've been doing?
I would love to. Thank you. Can I have a couple of minutes?
Please.
Or a minute?
Have at it. Yes. Spotlight is on you. Go. Hit it.
One thing is that I wanted to tell your listeners that I write for the Huffington Post. And recently I wrote a collaborative post with a culture writer called The Weapons of Mass Distraction. And in the post, she incorporated a poem from my book, A Dreamer's Guide to Cities and Stream, and the poem is called Quartered. And I was really thrilled because my editor had never published a poem of mine in the Huffington Post. So it was the poem and then her essay on how our electronic devices, you know, distract us.
Mm-hmm.
So I was very happy about that. And then I'll be speaking at the San Francisco Writers Conference over the Valentine's Day weekend up here in San Francisco. And we presenters, we faculty support people in their writing journeys. And I'll be teaching four classes on craft and on getting published. The classes are also can be found on after the conference. People can get them so they can write to me if they want to listen to any of the classes in a audio format. And at the conference, there's a free poetry and jazz event on Saturday night at 9 o'clock at the Mark Hopkins Hotel. So any of your listeners who happen to live up in the Bay Area, if they want to come down to the Mark Hopkins on Saturday night, it's a very elegant setting. There's going to be a jazz band and a bunch of poets reading that night. And then next month, Kelly, I'm going to be your guest.
Yay!
You are interview me.
Yeah, that'll be fun. My God, where will we go? I have no idea, but I know it will be fun.
I have a new book coming out, so you are going to, we're going to do it together. And I think the date of that show is February 17th, so that'll be right after the writing conference. Yeah.
Fabulous. How exciting.
Yeah. That's
great.
What's happening up here.
Great. And there's a couple things happening in my world. I've got... I'm working on the TV show Soul Search, so I'm going to be the next. Let's see, it'll be during the first week of February. So the next time, no, that'll be in 2 weeks from now. So that'll be on the road. I'll be doing my show live from the RV. We're traveling around the country, talking to different spiritual organizations and people that most spiritual paths that are kind of under the radar, and shining some light on those. And that should be wild. The show is called Soul Search, and I'll let you know when it airs and all of that good stuff. And I'm going to be joining forces for World Sleep Day, which is March 14th. I'm joining forces with the Four Seasons Hotel. So we're doing a campaign to get people, to teach people about how to sleep better, how to dream people, and yay for the Four Seasons for wanting to not just promote their hotel, but wanting to promote all the different ways that people can get an excellent night's sleep and also dream better. So I'm really excited to be part of that campaign to reach more people about dreaming and all that good stuff. And I'll be speaking at the Conscious Life Expo coming up in Los Angeles. It's the 8th of February. That's it. So if you're in the Los Angeles area, I'll be speaking. We'll be screening the movie Dreaming Heaven. I'll be facilitating a question and answer after that. So come to the Conscious Living Expo, Conscious Life, Conscious Living. Not sure what it is, but it's in Los Angeles in February. Look it up. Come. And if you haven't yet received your free dream goodies from me, go to KellySullivanWalden.com or IHadTheStrangestDream.com and put your name and email address in the little box in the upper corner and get your goodies. They change from time to time, so if you've already gotten some from me, go in and see what's new there. And there's a lot of other things, but go to the website to find out. Check out the Dream Bundle. It's got all kinds of great stuff as well. All right, so back to Marty's storm. She's taken us by storm today. So enlightening. How many times have you heard that in your life, Marty?
Oh.
My God. Okay, so
no comment.
No comment at all. Sorry to be cliche. But
no,
so for people who are listening that are maybe new to this concept, maybe they do dream a bit and they write it down, but they haven't yet turned their dreams into any form of art, whether it be poetry, dance, anything. There's so many different art forms. What is your suggestion to, how would you inspire them?
Well, I would actually recommend coming to one of my workshops.
Yes.
That would be a fabulous place to start, and I've inspired a lot of people to go in that direction about learning these techniques, and then you can do it at home. And it's, again, it's something that you don't have to stick to paint either. You know, it can be coming in, and this, we're just using it as a medium to start working the dream material creatively, and then it can be, you know, extrapolated out to writing or sculpture or dance, whatever it might be. It's learning the techniques of how to access that unconscious. I actually have a workshop coming up. I have two of them that include the intuitive painting. The first one is Dreaming Ourselves Awake, and that is March 28th, and that's the one that's co-facilitated with Travis Wernette. So we're going to be doing dream work and these dream paintings. The second one is April 25th, and that's going to be the all intuitive painting. We actually have a little breath work in there, too, for accessing the unconscious. So it's just beautifully woven together, the different ways of accessing dream material and the unconscious. Both of those are listed on my other website, which is awakentoyourdeeperself.com. Mm. So those are listed there.
You can. I'm just telling people they can also access all of your information at martystorm.com. So
yes,
if it
there's a
gets
link
confusing
over
to hear more than one URL, just visit Marty Storm and go down to her. Down on the bottom, near the bottom, there's a hot link that says workshops on martystorm.com, and all the information's there. God, I love this hippocampus.
Thank you for reminding me. Yeah. well, I wanted to say that when earlier you were talking about those big dreams that you felt were universal, those are what I call teaching dreams. Mm, you know, something that's coming through from the divine that wants to be taught. Offer them to the world. And I actually do, started writing these things in my blogs too about, you know, when stuff like this is coming through. It's like when it's so big and it's so much bigger than you in your life, it's like the divine coming through saying, okay, please share this with people.
So I'm on your website, and I clicked on Nightmare, 2001 Nightmare, and it looks like Burning Man. It looks like these are sculptures that you – and so tell us about how you've been able to – like you've created art even out of your nightmares. What was the process of this?
Uh-huh.
It looks like a dinosaur. If there's a story that goes with it, I'd love to hear.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. When I was a little kid, these skeleton horses chased me all over the place. It was totally traumatic. I had horrible dreams of these horses, these skeleton horses. But I'll tell you, in the process of creating this horse, I fell in love with it, and it was no longer scary to me.
Well, it's
and now
interesting
I love it.
that, I mean, sometimes I think if we have recurring dreams, we can see the progression of our consciousness with how they evolve.
Uh-huh.
So the skeleton horse looks really scary, but now this hippocampus is still a horse, but it's very watery and fluid and colorful. Maybe kind of, it seems like there may be a continuum in a sense. This, it's like on this arid, these skeleton horses are arid and dry, and the hippocampus is horsey but wet and juicy. I don't know, what does that feel like to you?
Yeah, no, that's a good point. That's interesting because, it's like moving through, transforming through some of that nightmare material into emotional, watery, unconscious. I'm not sure. There was still that element of that dark undertow I mentioned that was kind of happening with it. But by the action of creating the hippocampus, it feels like bringing so much more power into that aspect of that watery strength.
I love that they're teaching dreams. I think that's great. I interviewed Pat Allen once, the relationship expert, and she said that she had a series of dreams that all took place in ice and snow. And she said she realized that her sexuality had been really frozen over in her life, and she was kind of the ice queen. But as she learned to become more juicy and more alive, those waterways turned into rivers and lush valleys, and there was life that was growing around and in those watery streams, so that it was just like a similar theme, but she could see the continuum of her of her consciousness growing inside of that. And I even think about the recurring dream that I talk about so often, about the ex-boyfriend that just turns his back on me and rejects me, who's now in my latest dreams, who's been proposing to me and chasing me down. I'm like, back off, buddy. You're a little too much. So sometimes It's great to stick with these narratives and see how they evolve as we evolve, and to not necessarily take it as a sign of, oh, what's wrong with me? I keep having this recurring dream, but to think, mm-hmm. there's something right about this. It's showing me where I'm at in my process. So as we mm-hmm. begin to wrap this up, Joan, first of all, let's see, any last words that you want to say to inspire anybody about their creative process, their dreaming process, their waking up process? Last word.
Can
you.
I say, get your book.
I love you.
Get I Had the Strangest Dream and keep it by your bed. That's my vote. You know that. And also just, you know, my trick is, you know, when you wake up, don't just immediately rush, you know.
Right.
Have your coffee. I think I mentioned this to you. I was doing some work with an Ayurvedic practitioner. And one of their, you know, they have like four things that you need to do every day. And one of them is actually to write your thoughts down, you know, your internal process, like journaling. And a lot of times when I'm journaling, the dream will, I'll remember the dream. So kind of it's like, you know, like writing how one thing leads to another. I think sometimes putting the pen down, and even if you're just writing, you know, oh, this happened and I'm feeling this or pressured this, sometimes through that writing process, the dream will come. And then once the dream comes, you look up the key elements in your book and meditate on it. It's fabulous.
Ah, so simple. Thank you so much, Joan. That
so
was
simple.
Wonderful. And Marty, what about you? Any last words to leave our listeners with to inspire them?
Listen to your dreams. Let them come alive. There's a lot of messages that we might be telling ourselves or be having come in from our guides, you know, the greater universe. And listen to your dreams and let them flow. Honor them.
Yes.
With the creativity, like whatever form of creativity calls to you, like honor them. And and I feel like there's so much richness there that can come through when we do.
Well, I am truly inspired, and Joan Gelfand, thanks again for hitting it out of the park with picking a great guest, Marty Storm. Your work is so amazing, and not just your work, but your beingness, your consciousness, and the depth, and the magic of you. I feel like I'm in an... I feel so inspired. I feel like I'm really present to what's possible for humanity. I mean, it's not just about problem solving. It's not just about paying the bills and getting through the day. Of course, we do have to deal with that stuff, but it really is about incorporating as much of the beauty and the love and the wisdom and the magic of who we really are, and we find out about that when we're on the other side. But why wait till we're on the other side? Why not bring it in while we're here? And our dreams are one of those ways to help us do that. And I think by hanging out with Marty Storm, we can do that much more rapidly and just bring it in now. Heaven on earth is possible now, so why wait? Don't put it on the label, man. Don't leave your dreams lying down. Wake up. Pay attention to your dreams. Thank you so much. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
Join us again. We'll have another great guest next week. Until then, sweet dreams.
You've been listening to the Awakening Zone Radio Network, offering insights and inspiration for our evolving consciousness.